Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Jules Gill, we should talk about what the hell is going on with Titanfall slash EA slash the thing you messaged me about at 8 o'clock this morning.
No, hold on just a sec. It's gone, it's dead. I mean, to be fair though, do you know what's even worse than finding out that a game that you were really looking forward to is being cancelled? It's not knowing that the game existed and then being told it was cancelled before it ever had a chance to shine. Because now I'm like, my mind is conjuring up what it could have been. And that's actually sometimes worse. Because if they come out and say, we've just cancelled this brand new XCOM game, but it was actually XCOM meets Cooking Mama, and it was like a romance simulator delivered in a gacha style format. If it was all of that, then I'd be I'm not really that fussed that it's gone. But if it was like, oh, this brand new XCOM 3 has been silently deleted from existence, you're like, oh, but XCOM 3.
But we were so close.
Yeah, I know, right?
The,
yeah.
Like, that's always the case with things that get cancelled, is that you end up making the perfect version in your mind. And it's like things with Scale Bound or whatever, where it's just like, well, they could have just put it out. It would have been brilliant. And we have no idea. But the thing that came out about this Titanfall spinoff is that it was set in, obviously Apex is already in the Titanfall universe.
Yeah.
But it was
Titanfall Legends, it was called, wasn't it?
Yeah, Titanfall Legends. And it was going to be this whole sort of single player Titanfall game, but with Apex characters. Because it's like, the thing is, they said this years ago. When they launched Apex, they were like, guys, it's not Titanfall. We get it, but it's in the universe. And then all the business-minded stuff was like, well, clearly they're going to get back to that because that lets them sort of plug the Battle Royale excitement into a thing. And then they do that. And then, EA would have been the ones going like, well, we'll let you do the Battle Royale. And because you're doing the Battle Royale, you can have a nice little treat after.
Yes,
I
know,
right? And then they swing in and go, no, you can't.
I don't understand as well, because it's like Apex Legends isn't exactly like a Povo game, is it? It's making money hand over fist still, even to this day. It's like, yes, it's gone through like its controversies here and there with its how much it costs people microtransactions to buy all of the special event gear and stuff like that. But it's making a ton of money. So why would they not want to carry on that franchise? Doing this is like, they even put out a tweet recently, which was widely mocked with them saying that they were the best at single player games. Do you remember that? And now this is them going full circle and just being like, oh yeah, we're going to kill our own single player games.
I thought they'd learned their lesson. Like, we had, there was that whole thing where they were on Reddit and all the surprise mechanics and all that kind of stuff. And then in 2013, when they were like single player games are dead, and then but more recently you had Jedi Fallen Order, and it was like, okay, maybe they've realized, like, and it's Respawn as well, like they're one of your best teams, so like, why not let them do the thing they're really good at? So I don't know, at some point EA is gonna EA, and I guess they want more EA Football Club, whatever the hell that next FIFA thing is gonna be. So
I'm just really sorry for you personally, because I know that you champion Titanfall 2 as one of the greatest games, and it took me a while to get onto it because of the fact that I just was Titanfall 2 was slow on the uptake, and that game was sent out to die. Sandwiched between Battlefield and Call of Duty as a first-person shooter with a brand new IP behind it, you knew what you were doing with that, EA.
When you play like a turn-based RPG and there's a character that just doesn't have enough health for whatever the next attack is,
and you revive them
and they get hit again, and you revive them and they get hit again. And it's just like, I'll just let you stay down at some point, because every time I bring you back up, you die immediately. That's been the history of Titanfall.
That's really, really sad, man. But just so that people don't have a clue what we're on about and listening to us rambling, this is the UBP, the UBP, the UBP. One of our best intros yet, I'm afraid, I think, my friend.
I actually genuinely forgot about doing an intro there. Yeah, the entire part of the podcast. It's Scott Taylor, but that's Jules Gill.
I am indeed.
We are recording earlier than usual. We've got to squeeze some stuff in because I've got a radiator man coming, but he's just letting me know he's coming at some point today.
He's a superhero that goes around Gateshead.
He's dropping by. So we're trying to do a little bit of an earlier recording. But yeah, massive thank you to everybody for sending in all their questions across the Twitter and the Instagram. And one of the first ones that I wanted to get to was from Pinky about Titanfall.
Well, there we go.
But yeah, so I thought we might as well open on that because me and you were talking about that as soon as I was conscious this morning anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it was sad because it was like, I usually look forward to my Yongyear videos every single time when I see his stuff. They're always really well thought out. They're broken down in really nice ways. He's got facts to back him up and he's got such a smooth, buttery delivery. Yeah. But that was one of the times that I didn't want to see one of his videos because I was like, no, why? I was just getting into this.
I know.
But unfortunately, it speaks of a wider problem that's going into the video game industry as a whole because there's been recent layoffs, a reshaping of Halo is now going to be rebooted on the Unreal Engine. There's like tons of studios that are closing down or are on the brink of doing so. This was meant to be the resurgence year for the video game industry because it was like we'd had COVID, we'd gone through the pandemic, we'd seen these small developer units bunched together to work however they could to make impossible realities in video games come true. And now we're back and we've got all of the funding back again and people are spending more and pushing more. And it's like, oh, this is the industry that's dying. And it just makes me realize that, oh, yeah, we probably are going into like a global recession again now because of all the cost of living stuff. So it's like the money going into it seems less like of an investment for people, which is a real shame.
It's a weird thing because I feel like a lot of live service stuff was invested in across the last couple of years because they knew people were at home and there were massive spikes in player numbers and just the amount of time people were putting into multiplayer. And maybe it's just a reaction to that. But at the same time, like the fact that it's so widespread, I mean, I saw Knockout Cities having its final season this morning and that was extremely successful.
Yeah.
And I guess for it to get 9 seasons is far more than the Avengers is getting, but then almost every live service is shutting down. Like it's very seldom that one is actually able to keep going at the minute.
But
I don't know how much of that is a pandemic thing, like a post-pandemic thing, or whether it is just the trends in the industry. Like, I mean, I'm not keeping up with any live services anymore, and I don't know anyone who keeps up with more than one or two anyway.
It's that's the problem with them, though, is that they've all engineered themselves to be this thing that is a time sink. It is like, and you can't have more than one because they're designed to only reward the player that logs in every single day and grinds the hell out of every single optional and daily mission. It's like a live service model is a brilliant thing on paper, but in the long run, ironically, it has a very finite lifespan unless you are able to generate new and interesting content. And we will talk about the new Fortnite event crossover that just came out that we dropped this morning because that's how you stay relevant. You just go mad with it. You just go like, okay, cool, we're gonna get every single fan base from every single reach, every single niche group we're pulling into our main game, and that will keep it alive for at least a couple of years more. Like, for those of you not in the know, Junji Ito is a manga artist that does incredible sort of horror and macabre stuff. In fact, his Netflix show has just launched, and I weirdly enough, I'm a huge fan of his work, but I'm not actually loving all of it so far.
Right, okay.
There's out of the 7 or so episodes that I've watched, I've probably only enjoyed about half of the content that's on there. The rest of it's been a bit too like, and then it ended. It's like, cool. So resolution being nothing, but I have to say that the opening and closing tracks of the thing are bangers. They are such good tunes, mate. I would recommend you listen to them. Just for that.
I love Ito's, like, obviously I only knew Ino as an artist, so I like all the artwork that was doing the rounds back when he was rumored to be helping Kojima with the next Death Stranding. I don't think that's ever happening. But I'm sure Junji Ito was also involved in Silent Hill. I just know that name's been bandied around a little
bit. To be fair, like, it's one of those people, like, it's like Guillermo del Toro. It's like bandied around the horror sphere as being a linchpin of just this is expressive creativity. This is a reason why you should be excited about the horror genre or just the fantastical in itself. But they've just announced that in Fortnite, they're doing a crossover event with him. Now, one of the stories that is in the Netflix show that's just come out is that there's these balloons, right? I know this doesn't sound scary, but it does get scary eventually.
Okay.
They're giant balloons of your face. Imagine a giant Scott Tailford's face.
Just me flying around.
Yeah, just as a balloon, just like floating around. But here's the twist, my friend. Here's the rub. At the end of it, instead of a string, there's a noose. And it's trying to hunt down the person who's... It's you. The balloon is trying to hunt down you. Your balloon is hunting down you to
That's
hang
great.
You. It sounds great.
That's like modern-day balloon hunt, balloon fight.
Right. Right, okay. But it is terrifying, right? Yeah. To not only be hung by a balloon or hung in general, but also, why is this in a kid's game? And let's face it, Fortnite is definitely aimed at kids.
I think that's definitely in there. Like, the actual balloon thing is definitely in there.
Dude, take a look at the images. They've got the balloon with the noose. They've changed it from there must be a contents and guidelines thing that they're adhering to, because now the balloon doesn't have a noose at the bottom. It is like a sonic ring. It's like a solid ring. And okay, I'm pretty sure that the definition, like, to make something pass censorship, you can't show nooses in some countries and stuff like that because of the symbolism that comes with it. But a circle on a rope is slightly different, so therefore it will pass by most
censors.
Imagine
the board meeting there to have for that. I'm just like, we need to get this in Fortnite, guys, otherwise people aren't going to watch this show.
But it's like, what? Okay, look, I can't understand why nobody has forethought the news headline that's going to come out when this drops of thousands of kids around the world hang themselves. That is not an image you need for your game. That is a PR disaster.
That's like, because yeah, like I said, like they, because I keep thinking, like, how can they possibly keep going? How do they maintain the momentum? Yeah. And recently they just got Geralt and Doomguy, and they did that whole thing My Hero Academia, and then they did all the Dragon Ball stuff, and it's just like, it is becoming like all encompassing, like, and it's just like, but then
it's the Smash Bros of video games. Yeah. It's beyond that, isn't it,
like, of like IP. Yeah. And it's like, but I did not see Junji Ito's show getting rolled into that at all, and it's a weird thing, but now it literally just is branding. It's part of a marketing rollout. Like, if you're designing a marketing plan, it's like, well, how much money can we put into the Fortnite tie-in? We need like that for a couple of weeks or something. But yeah, a weird add-on.
It is indeed, because that goes back full circle to how are these live service titles operating. Mm. This one works because it's drawing so many lives from so many different IPs together. If you're focusing down on just one aspect of your game, no matter what you apply or add into it or tweak, it will run dry eventually. You will always see diminishing returns as players just go, well, what's the end game? What's the point of this? And Fortnite exists and thrives because they just go, there is no point, but here is the next thing. And that's
just keep going and do one of the bigger events or something, some crossover thing. We've got some live music for you. I think they do it the best out of everyone. I do think that it's genuinely really impressive. And our own Dan Durkin and James Dowse play Fortnite almost every day. I'm always getting pictures of them winning together every day.
It's bizarre because it's a game that has so many IPs that I love, and I watch footage of people playing it, but I have never... I think I've played three games in the entirety that it's been out, because it just doesn't appeal to me. It's just not what I want to play, but I will gladly watch people play it. I think that it's really fun as a spectator sport, but still utterly mad. What was Pinky's question, by the way? Just so we know, go back to the
actual,
original
the phrasing
question.
From Pinky was, what the actual monkey fighting flock is up with the Titanfall news?
So we've gone from Titanfall to balloons that hang kids. I feel like that's a natural progression
for
the UBP.
And
speaking of progression, let's move on to our next question and go over to Instagram, where I asked people what they want to ask us, and we got to Max B. Will we ever start voting with our feet instead of complaining about poorly released games?
It's hard, right? Because I mean, I think that like some stuff that is just like patently broken doesn't... I mean, I remember like recently, what was that Necromunda game, like Hired Gun?
Yeah.
And it's like, that looked solid enough, but then at launch it was just completely broken. So the word was kind of out that like it just wasn't worth the money. And I remember a sizable backlash to that. And that's a weird one to pull out of the ether. But I feel like
you just looked at me and you thought, Jules is a Warhammer fan. Let's punch him in the gut a few times. Yeah, go for it.
It makes you think of the macabre. But I think in regards to stuff like that, it's like you have to play it to know that it's broken. And if something is popular enough or marketed well enough, you're already in before you realize the problems with it. I do agree, though, that it is a massive problem. Like, I absolutely hate the modern reality of you get a game and it's broken and you go, oh well, I can't wait, I look forward to the patch then. Like, we talked about this on the podcast before, about how twisted that is and how stupid it is. About, you get excited for a fix, like a patch. Like, I've got Forspoken, which is an absolute mess of a video game. I don't think it's like,
that's
horrific.
A shame. I know that I was like very harsh on the dialogue and stuff like that, but I thought that the action and stuff actually looked okay. So I'm actually
it
quite
looks
sad
better
that it's
than
not
it
done
plays.
Well.
Yeah, it's I think it opens really well. Like, I actually really like the prologue, but I think it does fall down the stairs over and over and over again after that. Yeah. However, that game's resolution and performance and everything is terrible. It's like 720p on 60 fps on the performance mode.
What?
It's terrible. It's really blurry. It just looks like looks like absolute hell. And
why?
So
would you release it like that?
And so like, I got a patch stick the other day and I saw it was updating on the PS5. And I was like, oh, maybe they've made it HD now. Maybe it's like really clear. Yeah. And then I Googled it and it's like, no, actually it makes it worse. And I was like, oh, okay, cool.
It makes it worse.
Apparently it makes it worse. So I'm just like, I'm still going through. How I know it's just blurry. It's, you know, when you play, like, if you ever played like a big AAA game on a Switch and it's really blurry because they just have to lower the resolution to make it work. For whatever reason, Forspoken looks like that. Some of the character models are in better resolutions than the environments, but everything is just blurry. It just looks like hell.
Right. I tell you what, if you're going to make a game like this and it's going to be as bungled as it is, please do not give the media and punsmiths at large an excuse to just change the name of your game slightly to express how disappointed they are. Because Forspoken, Forsaken more like, my friend. I feel like don't do it to us now.
I think that that game, I mean, that's a whole separate conversation on just how, like, getting it and then realizing what an abomination it is. I think in regards to raw technical performance, we could do with something that does sort of, like a dedicated website that says, isisitbroken.com.
That's actually not a bad shout.
I know, and everyone can just sort of go on there. I always go on, I don't know about you, if your internet drops off, if you go on downdetector.com, but I always
to see if other people are.
And just see if other people have said, like, oh, actually, problems in my area. And I think something like that, it's like, launch day, is it broken? Like, you know, and you get an immediate readout on whether it actually is functional or not.
But this is the problem, isn't it? It's like there's like an interconnected web of other moving parts, because you have... Yes, we'd want to tell people straight away, day one, is it worth getting because it's broken or not? Mm-hmm. But you can only do that if you're given review copies early enough to assess if it is. And the review outlets usually have NDAs in place that usually come with, when you sign this and get a copy of this game for review, you accept that day one patches are incoming. True. So you can't even tell people that it's broken day one, because if you do, then they'll say, well, no, we did tell you that a day one patch was coming, so you can't outright say that it's broken. It's like, there's so much wording in these NDA contracts that we have to deal with that are... They're absolute BS, by the way, half of them.
Yeah.
Like, I showed somebody one that had already passed, and they were just like, this is non-enforceable. Like, you realise that half of this stuff here, they're asking
legally
you to do.
They're not enforceable.
It's like the Dungeons & Dragons thing, where they say, like, well, you can't make money off this. There is no legal copyright way that they are allowed to enforce you, stop you from doing this. It's like, but I digress. It all comes down to this thing of, you can't really vote with your wallet when you're not given full transparency within the industry.
Yeah, like, that's
the,
a really good
point. Moment that pre-orders existed, that broke that trust there, because you basically said, hey, look, just accept that the game is going to be good. Mm-hmm. Luckily, I will say that I did a little bit of research before the pod.
Mm-hmm.
Pre-orders as a whole have nosedived in the last maybe 5 years. There are certain tentpole franchises, like your sports games, your wrestling games, they usually do very well in the pre-orders because people accept that they're going to go into the cycle no matter what. But in terms of like a standalone titles, pre-orders have gone way down. Like, apparently the pre-orders for God of War Ragnarok, the super special editions, were like next to none. It was the regular editions, they pre-ordered very well. So it's usually stuff that has either tracked well in the past, that has a good sort of trust record, they will get good pre-orders. But for the majority of games coming out there that offer pre-orders, like your Sonic Frontiers and whatnot, they all just like, they'll get like middling to low.
I wonder if just the general idea of, like I said, like marketing is, like the thing is that it's like, you think about the steps that got us here, like that whole idea of like pre-orders were a massive thing across the 2000s. That was like the big issue of the day. There was the whole thing about day one DLC and the fact that the file sizes, you're not adding anything to the game, you're just unlocking parts that are already there. And then like when Bethesda stopped doing early access codes to their reviews, and it was just like day one reviews, that fundamentally changed. Like it plays into the hype thing, because it's like, well, I need to get this to see for myself, or I'm just going to get this because it's what I've been looking forward to for months. And then it's like, well, does that work? Like you said, if pre-orders have nosedived and people are just buying stuff off impulse, then know that we won't en masse vote with our wallets or whatever, because they're already winning. Like it's like you need something that
you're not giving full information.
Yeah, and it's like you said, you don't have enough money, like on the review, the early access side, or just on some general sort of way of collating, is your game broken? Okay, my game's broken. Unless we literally talk about it, it's very rare that there's no site really known for that. You can kind of get something that blows up on Twitter. Maybe there's like a video, an image or something of like, this thing is an absolute, like Pokemon Scarlet and Violet, a lot of images of that being absolutely broken. But that game was the best-selling Pokemon game like ever or something.
Yeah.
So it's just, it didn't get in the way of it. I think it sucks that we just have to accept, for the most part, that games are broken until enough of a stink is made about it, like with everybody all at once kind of thing. But bringing that together was hard.
There have been a few examples where real-life controversy before the game has come out has also shaped the sales and impacted the game. So people have voted with their wallets by being given information about the people who make the game and stuff like that. Like I know the current Justin Roiland stuff that's going on meant that High on Life sales are like way down, and right. they've said that there's no sequel or something like this. There's some rumors that it's all going to like go around that. And mm-hmm. then obviously you've got the J.K. Rowling stuff with the mm-hmm. Hogwarts Legacy. People choosing not to play that at all, boycotting the entire thing, understandable. Mm-hmm. And then you've got everything with Ubisoft, with the way that they treat their employees and mm-hmm. how they've come out with that. Like, who was the recent person that said that it's in your court now?
Yves Guillemot. That was when the Ubisoft workers had a strike, and there was the whole general sort of conversation. Like, okay, if you want to revive the company, the ball's in your court.
Weirdly enough, though, loads of people from that were just saying, like, well, we don't want to support your company now because this is how you treat your employees, so why should we support you? And unfortunately, it is affecting the employees in general in that sense, because they're gonna experience lower returns and therefore may have been downsized and moved on to other projects and whatnot. Mm. But that is voting with your wallet. It only comes from being given the information to do so. And the more that the video game industry keeps itself cloaked from reality, mm-hmm. the less informed we are, and the less informed we can make people listening to these podcasts or to our content.
Yeah, the thing as well is like thinking about like digital storefronts. Like, it's like if you can just get a user base plugged into a digital storefront, then you control the pricing side of it as well. Mm-hmm. And it's just mm-hmm. that idea of like, I think that it's worked largely in their favor. It's not like every single company worked together on this across the last few years, but all the steps that have got us here has created this like system that just works in their favor in regards to massive sales and a very little communication between people as to like, okay, you should avoid this for now because it is absolutely on fire. Most mm-hmm. of the time, like, and I guess I definitely fall into this, like if I'm excited for something, I just want to play it. You're telling me it's available, I'll go buy it, I'll see what it's like. And so that is like part of the problem. Sometimes I'll wait if something's an absolute disaster, but it's rare. I mean, I'll only really wait if it fundamentally doesn't run. As opposed to like, I'm like, well, I want to make my own decision on it. And I guess the roles that we play, like we have audiences kind of thing. I would rather let anyone who's listening to us know what the deal with the game is anyway. But even before I was doing this for a living, I was always like too curious. And it is just people at the top taking advantage of that curiosity and trying to fix stuff later. Pokemon Scarlet and Violet still doesn't run very well. Like, they're never going to fix that game. They put some patches out, like some of the like stuff in the distance where it was like moving at like one frame a second. Maybe now it's 2 frames a second. Like, they've done a little bit, but they're not going to overhaul the textures or anything. Like, that game just still looks like ass. They're never really going to fix it. But yeah, I would champion anyone to launch a proper website, like a Down Detector, like a How Long to Be, like something like that, where it collates, is it broken? And literally as midnight breaks, I guess it'll be in Australia first, people check in and go like, okay, this one's good, lads. Right, this is what you should play. Watch out for that thing in the second level or whatever, but we'll see. Next question from Karel Type Shaw, who says, lads, with PlayStation VR 2 seemingly going to be another lukewarm product, is it time for Sony to return to the handheld space? Also, have any of us played Chained Echoes? Want to give that game a shout? Cheers to the best gaming pod in the world. Well, thank you very much for the lovely kind words. Now, yeah, we mentioned Chained Echoes, I think, last week or something. I'll not go on about
that. You mentioned it twice in 2weeks.
You should play it, Jules. It's really good.
It's on my list, mate. It's on my list. I've been very busy recently, but yes, I will put it on my list.
It's like a crossover. I mean, I think on the back of the box, it says something like it's a crossover of Final Fantasy VI and Chrono Trigger, but that is literally what it is. I've only played the opening bit, but I think it's very, very nice. But I recommend it if you like old school RPGs. For PSVR 2, where do you come down on that? I can't believe it's actually out next month, or maybe this month. I think they've done a horrific job of marketing it, and they have a whole new, you know, platform that's coming out, and you'd barely even know it.
So what are we looking at in terms of the base price for this new PSVR 2?
Let me have a Google.
It's like, it is excessive, isn't it? It's very, very good, like, high. My hands, my experience with it has been that I was actually chatting to Ash about it, because obviously she works for PlayStation Access, so they got hands-on with it, and they were playing Horizon Zero Dawn's VR game on the bit that I was watching.
She
said it's absolutely amazing. Like, it's got like haptic feedback, so that she actually felt that when she was pulling the bow string back, that actually felt resistance on it, which is
probably it is
very
incredible
impressive.
Once you actually get hands on.
Like, I imagine it's amazing, but at the same time, I had no idea that it was releasing so soon. It seems like the level of content that's coming out for it straight away does not seem to be impressive. It's another effective console, let's just think of it like that, that is coming out with next to no titles on
They've got like, so price wise, it's $550, it's £530.
That's so much. That is so much.
And so I guess maybe they'll change it or something. And it's not backwards compatible, although quite a lot of games do have the next gen quote unquote update where you can just put some stuff in, like Super Hot, I think. It'll just work like Walking Dead, Saints and Sinners and things like that. But yeah, they've got Horizon Call of the Mountain. They've got like stuff that, I guess, like the fact that we're talking about it now, like people do know about the Horizon game, but I just feel like overall VR, it's like, I don't know if I ever see it breaking through. I feel like it is just fundamentally niche. Like just the way, because I have a PSVR, I got it for No Man's Sky. And I'm just like, when you play things in VR, for me, they are fundamentally isolating. I'm like shutting the world off. Like even if my loved one is in the room with me or whatever, it's just like, you have to sort of do that. And it's not that the experiences aren't unique and fun enough, but I've not had a VR experience where I've thought like, I want to be in this world more than the other. Like it's just one of those things where I end up going back to regular console stuff after a little while.
Well, it doesn't help as well that the publishers themselves that once championed the PSVR or VR in general have also abandoned it. So, I mean, like, you got a good case of Resident Evil Village being... Resident Evil 7 was built from the ground up with the VR in mind. Mm-hmm. But then when 8 came out, it's like, no, it's just a first-person shooter that can be
pretty
played
much.
Like that if you mod it or whatever. But it's like, I feel like the VR in general was such a huge hit. It really had that same vibe as Guitar Hero. It was expensive to start off with. It was limited in what types of games that were available to it, aka it was either that or Rock Band. But it was so much fun to play that it became a talking point of the household. You would show people it. It became the most fun toy that you had at the time. But because of the fact that it's like, apart from a few breakout games like Beat Saber and stuff like that, I just don't feel like VR has made that next jump into where it should be. Now, I could be wrong in that they could release titles down the line that truly incorporate them again, but the fact that Sony itself is approaching the PSVR 2 by saying separate games for the hardware, we're not looking to tie in, we're looking to just have these games for this is like the Virtual Boy. It's like you can't play the games on anything less than that, and I just hope that it's not as big a disaster.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, they have some crossover. I just brought up the launch lineup. It's just some, isn't it?
It's like no one seems that invested in doing it anymore. It's really a weird thing.
Like they've got like Resident Evil's getting a PSVR 2 patch. Like Gran Turismo 7's going to have one. I remember with the original PSVR, you could play like Wipeout in VR was really fun.
Yeah,
that is one of my
really
fondest memories. Because it's like you are literally just in that ship having those races. But I don't know. I just don't know if people have like a fundamental disconnect with like, okay, I have to get up off the couch and stand and move around and do this thing.
Yeah, it's a faff,
and it's
isn't
just
it?
Not going to be for everyone. Also, I think with PSVR 2, like it's not wireless, which that was a deal breaker for me, because I was like, I just want something I can just slip on if you want it to be this like easy. If I'm switching between games and then I switch to a VR game, I don't want to have to like change my entire living room just to do that. So like, the fact that it's still a wired system, I think for me, I was just like, oh, this isn't, because the Oculus Quest is wireless at this point. And it's sort of like, I would rather just be able to chuck that on.
I always think as well that it's like, It's prohibitive, as well to some gamers, because if you have a disability or you don't have a spatial awareness in that sense, or have the inability to use two controllers at once, you can't play that game. There is no. There is no way that you can do that. I mean, there are companies out there that are making controllers and stuff like that to allow people to do it, but I feel like if Sony invests in this and pushes forward, they're almost making gaming unfair, and I don't think that that should be, like, it goes back to almost like the difficulty in video games question. It should be accessible for all, and I don't think that Sony will ever invest 100% of its resources into something like this when they know that a large part of their gamer base who aren't able to use these things for whatever reason would be saying, well, you've just made gaming inaccessible. And
that's a really good point. I mean, they do have, like, there is the accessibility controller that they're working on, but I don't think, like you said, I don't think they'll be able to make VR work in the same way. It's more like a console controller kind of thing. But yeah, that's a really good point. And I think that, like, just overall, there are a lot of factors that just don't make, like, you know, VR as a general thing that engaging, like that appealing. I guess I'll see how things respond or whatever. I know Josh is like a huge fan of VR and he's been looking forward to this. He was pre-ordering it. And everything. So, like, he'll be diving on. I think we'll put some videos and stuff together across the month for it. But yeah, I'm curious to see how this thing lands, because it just feels like, you know, all the marketing was done on the PlayStation blog. Like, there's a couple of videos, there's some Call of the Mountain stuff.
Gotta love that blog, mate. It's
apparently
where all of the things drop, but no one goes to it.
No, it's just, who's sitting reading a text announcement for something? Like, it's like, get on, announce this better. But I guess we'll see how things go anyway across the month.
Indeed, indeed. We're going to move over to the Instagram now. And from Locks London, we have a question directly for you, Mr. Scott Telford. How does Scott find time to be married and seem to be up to date with the latest games and shows? And I think that you have detailed this before, but why don't you tell people a day in the life of Scott about what time you go to bed and what time you wake up and how much video games you squeeze in between?
So the point one, the solution to this problem is just marry a nerd. All you want to do is marry someone who has the same life interests as you. Like, I mean, someone who you can play games through with, and if something single player that they'll be happy to watch with you, or maybe they'll want to, like, start their own save, and then you get to sort of revisit things from a different perspective. Maybe you catch something in a level that you didn't beforehand. So there's that. I mean, where me and my wife are currently going through Persona 4 because she's never been through that, and I was like, we need to go through Persona 4. But yeah, a day in my life, I mean, I've gotten better with the, I used to stay up until about 2 and 3 in the morning, but that was because we used to work, like, especially during the pandemic, it was like 10 till 6, so I could sort of still get my 6 hours, my 7 hours. And I still stand by a 7 hour thing, so I'll stay up until about 1 now, and then get up at like 7:30-ish, whatever. It's not great in terms of the time thing, but I get in, I do 9 to 5, so it's like, yeah, I just sort of stay up later on at night and try and get through as much stuff as possible. But the general solution is definitely that it's like, this lifestyle is supported, as is like, my wife is like, has a whole crafting business and loves to write and loves to just make stuff in general. And play games and read comics and everything too. So it's like,
to say, Scott, do a plug. What's the crafting business called? Get a plug.
She's got a few of them. The big business is Baking Without Borders. There's one on Instagram called Make It Through. There's Make It Through 2, which is all, like, her brother once said when they were watching Lord of the Rings, and he was like, if Frodo can make it to Mordor, we can make it through this.
That's really cool.
So she was like, the Make It Through collection has become this whole thing on Instagram of, like, different companies and different sort of brands and stuff, and her going like Undertale, it's like, if you know, if the kid can make it out of the underground, then you can make it through this.
Oh, awesome. And things that's like really
that.
Cool.
So, yeah,
like,
go check out Make It Through. It's called Make It Through 2 because I think there's another one that had the same name, but we were like, the Make It Through name is too good for a crafting business.
Yeah.
So go check that out for a cheeky plug.
That's really, really cute, man. And I think that's like, so people, again, I don't know if people realize this, we don't actually get to play that many video games in our day-to-day life. We actually
during office time.
Yeah, we have to do like so much writing. For you, it's like freelancers, management, just running the gaming channel itself.
Just people come to me going, can we write about this? And I'm like, if it's this.
and there's very little time that you can actually play these games. So it's a shame because sometimes you'll have like a review code sitting in your email and you'll just be like, oh, it's downloading. I can't play it yet though. I've got to wait for that. Like, you're watching the clock tick down like Bart at school and the hand starts going backwards. You're like, come on,
we do stuff on lunch breaks or whatever.
But we don't
play stuff during the day unless it's hopefully for streaming, which we're going to attempt to bring streaming back.
Yay,
we'll make that work again. Especially because there's just so many games this year. Next question from Mouse Hands, which is me. Little old Mouse Hands, who says, hope we're doing well. I'm currently freezing in Texas. Y'all make podcasting seem so easy. What would you say is the biggest hurdle of starting your own podcast? Also, where is the What Culture Food podcast? I need more ideas like cereal in a cup.
Oh, mate, I can't believe that he's ratified cereal in a cup.
Hell yeah,
well.
Yeah.
Okay, so
talk to you about this? That you can, there's a range of cups. No, maybe you sent me it. There's a range of cups on Amazon that are like professionally made cereal in a cup cups. They have
you
like
are
little.
Kidding me.
No, like literally, it's a business. I was like, has someone heard me and made this? Because it's like a plastic cup, but it has like a filter in the middle, and you put your cereal in the middle and your milk around the outside, and they slowly filter into each other so that when you drink, you get a bit of both. And I was like, this was literally what I described on a previous podcast.
Wicked, yeah. Choking hazard in a cup. I mean, that just sounds amazing. I can't wait.
Choking
sign me
on
up.
Doritos, yeah.
Oh, what's next? You're going to have like a self buttering toast that also has the knife on the edge so you can poke yourself in the eye when you eat it. Yeah, great.
If
one.
You had a little robotic arm that like came round the toast and buttered the toast for you. I'd probably
this isn't Wallace and Gromit, mate. We're not invested into these crazy, fantastical things.
Hey,
just
you wanted to know
toast.
what my life was like day to day. It's more Wallace and Gromit than, or I wish it was more like Wallace and Gromit than it currently
is. So they're freezing in Texas. I mean, how cold
apparently.
Can it be over there?
I don't know. Maybe they're going through a cold spell.
Google right now. What's the temperature in Texas right now? I want to know because I doubt that it's less than 8 degrees.
It is 6 degrees
here.
At this current time.
Well, I stand corrected.
That's 10 a.m. In the UK. But
wow.
Yeah,
to be fair, though, that is actually a really significant temperature drop for them, though, because they're used to sort of like 35 degrees minimum a day. Right. So it's just kind of like, yeah, that is actually really cold for them. That's like a mild day here in the UK.
Yeah, that's just regular for us. Hence why we're recording this podcast indoors while still layered up.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, in terms of what was the biggest hurdle to starting your own podcast? I guess distribution. Like we go with Acast. Because you want to make sure that you get your podcast out there. I've heard loads of different platforms in general. But we go with Acast. They're a paid monthly one. But they do help find sponsors for you and help, they get in touch with the Spotify's, the Apple's, whatever, and they get the podcast out there for you. But we do pay monthly for it. And so there's that. That's a bit of a push and pull. But obviously, like, you hope that you make enough for it to offset it. I would recommend Acast. They've been awesome with us. And, like, all the sponsorships that we have all go through them. They're all from them. They're all them recommending them.
I'd say as well that it might seem super, super obvious, but audio, you've got to make sure that you have got yourself a decent set of mic. Recently, I was watching some D&D podcasts, and they usually have a really nice setup, and they have like a professional studio, and they use some incredibly expensive mics, but they took it on the road. So they only had their microphones that came from laptops and from their phones that they'd managed to sync up. And the drop in quality, it dropped the immersion as well. Like, they're great characters, really, really fun, very entertaining. But I did feel that the lack of quality meant that it was very hard to listen to because it's almost been standardized across the board now. You have a certain sound, a rich tone that comes from certain types of mic. So I would say that an investment there, minimum, I'd say between 150 to 200 quid. We use right now for these is the Rode Procaster microphones. Now, admittedly, they are XLR cable ones.
Boy.
Cheers, man. I mean, to be fair, I took it when I went from the office. I was like, right, see you later. I'm just having this one. This is straight to XLR, so you'll need a mixer for if you're going to record to your computer. But the overall package, 250 quid. It might sound like a lot, and I know that it is for some people, but if you do make that investment, it will make the quality of your production that much better. And at the end of the day, that is going to be the first thing that people recognize.
Yeah, definitely. That's definitely true that you want to get a good high fidelity mic. I do find that because I use a Snowball when I'm recording from home, and which is like a cheaper alternative, and you can get that set up quite nicely. Like, I just have it like in between some blankets and stuff as like a sound dampener thing. I would say is like if you just want to get something off the ground, quite a lot of it depends where you're recording as well. If you think about the location that you're in, maybe you can find somewhere that isn't as echoey, and maybe that'll be better off. I do think that some of the microphones that are just built into phones are quite good now. Like,
yeah, they can be quite good.
Especially if you're just starting out and you just don't have the money to go and get like a big Rodecaster mic. I used to do before I got hired at Wackleshow, when I was just interviewing bands and stuff, I used to just set my phone up with it. It was like a directional mic app thing. And that came out quite nicely. So sometimes if you just want to get something serviceable, just because I would like encourage getting something together and then you've got something to review and be like, okay, that needs to be improved. I want to stutter less here or whatever it is.
I think as well that just having looking at your direction of your podcast, it keep it simple. That is the thing. Like, I've seen so many podcasts fall at the first hurdle because they try to do everything straight out of the gate. You can't build gimmicks, you can't build in jokes, you can't build community stuff without getting there. If you go out of your mind with like, right, we're going to brand this, this is our catchphrase, this, you're overthinking it too much. And also try and stop your podcast from being, it's a cooking show slow, but at the same time they're juggling, and every time they drop a ball they have to do this spicy wing challenge. Like, right. It sounds brilliant on paper, but in practice you're adding too many elements. So keep it as simple as possible. The UBP works because it is questions coming in. We get to talk to you as if you were here with us. You're answering your questions. It's simple.
It's exactly how we would do it in real life as well.
Exactly, yeah. But if it's like, I do see some podcasts that are like, okay, but we're going to roll a dice at the end of each question, or we're going to do this and that and the other. And it's like, lads, you are making this overtly complicated, and it doesn't often work the way you want it to. So therefore you've got fumbling and issues with people trying to get scramble to fill that dead air that you've created because of it. So yeah, keep it simple. That's
I'll
biggest
say as
advice.
Well, don't worry about, you know, like, because there's always that thing of like, okay, I'm being recorded, oh my god, I need to be completely on point, I must say the perfect thing at all times. Don't be afraid to just be human, and if you find yourself stumbling for a thought or something, just steer into it. Just be like, what am I trying to say? Okay, it's this. That's completely fine. No one cares. Like, people stumble, people talk, it's fine.
We have many times where Scott and I, because we've been doing this for so long, we have less of them. But if I need a hand, I'll ask Scott a question. Like, he's a human. He's there to help me. He's not there to hang me out to dry to make himself look better. So if he was like, what's this thing I'm looking for? I don't know this. I'll quickly Google it. Or I'm like trying to bring up a fact as he's talking about it. So we've got something to check against. So yeah, trust your co-host if you're doing it with another person.
Also, like, I mean, unless you're doing it live, you have editing time. Like, that's a big thing to fall back on. Like, you can always be like, oh, I can cut this entire thing. Like, oh, that didn't work. That doesn't add anything. It's actually snappier if I come in 3 minutes later. Whatever. Just know the tools that you have available to you, but ultimately it is about a level of comfort that will come if you just do it, if you just set something up and do it. It doesn't need to be as immediately 100% professional as, you know, people that you're influenced by feel, but just do it, just get on with it, and then, like, you'll see what you've got.
Totally agree. And speaking of great partnerships like Scott and I, let's move over to the Instagram space where we talk to Alano or Ella. Yeah, Ella. Ella Alano.
No, we didn't address the What Culture Food podcast. I would love a WFP. I don't think there's not one in the works, but if we ever do another What Culture channel, maybe it would be a food one.
That would have to be a video podcast, wouldn't it? With us eating half of the stuff that we made, the horrible concoctions from around the world. See, that would take time and effort, but I would be up for that. We're going to move over to Alano or Ella Alano's 1984's question. As I'm playing GoldenEye on Game Pass, is Natalia the most annoying escort mission, and say it with me, kids, of all time? So this is the thing. I mean, she is pretty bad, and you've just got the Switch version of GoldenEye as well, didn't you?
I've got both, because the Xbox, I wanted to compare them. I don't really like how it feels to aim on Xbox, because they tried to make it all aim down sights and stuff. But I'm going through it on Switch. I just did the bunker, whatever you call it, mission yesterday. The one where you've got that, I think it's called Alexei, the guy with the glasses, and you have to guide him around. I thought that mission sucked, because he just wouldn't do the thing I wanted him to do. And then I had to take a photo of a thing on the wall, but I couldn't equip the camera, and I was like, oh, what is this? But then you had to get out the main menu and go from there.
It shows you how bad as a video game trope that escort missions are when you can only find lists that say these are the best ones, as in, like, there's so few of them that we've put them into a list, because it's like, and you know, the likes of Yorda from
Ico,
like, and Elizabeth from BioShock Infinite, they usually rank up along among the top of the best ones. But in terms of the worst, I mean,
I remember when you had to escort Whistler in Blade 2.
I never played that.
You don't need to. I just remember that whole thing where he pops in, he's like, get me to the other side of the sewers, Blade. And he's just like, he's hobbling along with his shotgun. And I was amazing. Like, you've got a shotgun, use it.
The AI allies that you have from Daikatana, they're really bad as well. And you can end up killing them with friendly fire as well. And there are guns in that game that ricochet and explode off of everything. Right. So it's quite common to kill your mates by accident.
That's one thing in GoldenEye, is that it lets you just shoot everyone. I was just gunning down Sean Bean in that first level. I was just gunning down everybody, which is just hilarious, because you can just break the scripting of the entire level. It also, that game lets you finish levels even if you haven't finished the objectives. You can just go to the end.
I know, that's mad, isn't it? You just go,
hey, by the way, you missed that thing. And it's like, well, I guess I'll go do it all again. Like, you can just make a save point wherever you want on the Switch one, which I don't think you can do on the Xbox. But yeah, like, just that Natalia thing we've had in tons of lists. We used to do a lot more, because it was the Spec Ops line of its day for a while on the website, where it was just like the worst mission ever.
I think what made it so bad, though, was because of the fact that there was that delay between your actions and her following you, and it always used to time up with whenever the bad guys would enter the room. So she would be therefore standing quite literally between you and the enemies that were shooting you. Mm-hmm. And they had no issue shooting her to get to you. And you had to be like, oh, please get out of the way.
Yeah.
And there was no way to tell her to like stay here or move around this. Like, I know that people got annoyed. Like, I'm interested how they're going to approach it with Ashley in Resident Evil 4 Remake, because... Mm-hmm. Well, I actually quite enjoyed Resident Evil 4 because of Ashley's involvement, mm-hmm. because it actually gave me a that sort of panic when it was like, mm-hmm. oh, she's been grabbed. They never out and out killed her, so it was never like a game over. They would obviously walk towards that exit thing, but it made that times pressure feel very like intense. Mm-hmm. But I'm interested to see how they do that now when they seem to be so focused on action, running and gunning. Like, have you seen the new footage that dropped?
Yes, I was just going to ask you if you've seen that. Yeah,
dude, it looks amazing in that. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm really hyped for this game. So it's going to be interesting how they apply those sort of updated action-y graphics and gameplay mentality to... Ashley.
There's like the realism stuff as well, where like I entirely forgot someone was sharing it this morning. There's that bit where you play as Ashley and you can scream at the zombies and they all burst from the original one. I was like, are they going to keep that in the remake, like where she's like got the power of like that dude from Condemned 2, like powerful Dovahkiin vocal cords. Final question from The Bright Side of History, who says, Champions of Men, I must know, are your gaming collections just enormous? Does the industry provide review copies that are loaners, or even do you prefer not to shelve them so you can share the love with the other folks? The industry barely provides, well, not physical review copies anymore anyway. It's very few and far between getting digital these days too.
The last physical copy that I remember getting was Persona 5. That is the last one that I got. And it was a good one, to be fair.
People won't know that when you get given a review copy, it's just a plain pressed disc in like a blank jewel case, or it used to be.
Yeah, you can't trade it on itself. Or anything like that.
Yeah, you can't trade it. Or you can give it to a friend, obviously, but it's not. Yeah, it's very like this factory sort of printed thing. The disc doesn't have any graphics on it and it's in a plain case. So you get a bunch of them. Sometimes if it's Sony first party, you do this, where you get like, or you used to get like a physical package with something in, like some nice graphics. Like God of War came with like a bit of artwork and stuff, and so did Horizon. Which I guess actually God of War was after Horizon, so there is that. But yeah, they're very few and far between. Like God of War Ragnarok, like the other month, was just a digital code. Like most of them are just codes. It's very, very rare that you get anything physical. But still, I guess that means we have big libraries.
Yeah, the thing is that it helps them deliver the content to you on time to make sure that it's not like lost in post or whatever. It's a great cost saver for them because they don't have to send you any physical media whatsoever. And also it's just another means of like limiting what amount of stuff you have lying around your room. Like my game collection is limited now because ever since I moved over to more PC gaming, my PS4 library of games is the biggest outside of my PlayStation 1 retro collection that I've got. But it's mad because I don't have any physical games. I haven't bought a physical game for my PC or any other PlayStation, Xbox, whatever I've got, or Switch for ages. It's all just been downloadable codes. Like I have a very minimal trash pile, as it were. but the problem with that is that, as we were talking about with digital storefronts, my game could be deleted at any time. It could be removed from. It could not receive support. It would blah 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 blah. Like I don't own any of the games that I own at the moment.
Well, I've been getting back into physical stuff just because I realized that there's a place nearby that'll let me trade them in again. So I was like, okay, I can get back into that economy. And some of the trading prices are quite solid if you sort of play something fast enough where it's still classed as a brand new game within like a month or so. Obviously, it depends how well it's received. Forspoken is not going to sell very well. I'll probably get 50 pence for it or something. But I traded stuff in to get Forspoken because I was like, I'm not going to spend my, you know, much money on this, but I do want to play it. So, so that sort of got me back into getting physical with the knowledge of I will trade this on later, which you just don't have with digital. But yeah, I guess overall, if we look at like the amount of like things that we've redeemed, the amount of licenses that we have like for those games, they are massive libraries. But the whole thing with like the amount of storage space that consoles have, you can only really have about 5 or 6 games installed anyway.
Because we were talking about that ages ago, about how it might have been weaponized by the Call of Duty makers, the massive file size, to basically push other games off of your console or your hard drive to basically say, hey, look at this massive investment of time that you spent downloading it. You should only play me. And as a level of really subtle and oily marketing, that's actually quite brilliant. It's horrible, but it's
if that was the truth, that would be like evil genius, like rolling their fingers together territory.
Yeah, man.
Of we can just own the entire system.
The only downside I'd say that to having the code review copies that we get is that we can't share them amongst us. There are the option, I guess, to create a shared Steam library between us, but then you go into who has access to it, should they have access to it at all times because of the fact, and if somebody's playing that, then are they going to affect other people? Because it's like NDA stuff as well, so.
We used to have a shared PlayStation account that we used to use it in the office, but only one person can use it at any time, and you can't see what someone's playing. So there were, I remember when we had Spider-Man, and all of us, everybody obviously wanted to play Spider-Man, and we'd all started separate saves on it, but we would message and be like, okay, what time are you going on? Right, okay, I'll be on it for about half an hour. I'll be on it, like, and it just didn't work. And then at one point it was like, I think it was 1 a.m. and I was like, no one's going to be online now, so I'll just boot it up. And then Rich messaged me back when Rich was here, and he was like, you just booted me off Spider-Man. He's like, I was in the middle of this fight.
Mate.
And I was like, I'm just going to get my own copy of this thing.
Yeah, exactly. At that point,
to share this amongst everybody is not working. But yeah, we do get thankfully sent a lot of stuff. We're going to try and get back on like review stuff. I think just in general, the industry has more stuff to talk about this year, as opposed to like there weren't that many touchstones or whatever across last year. But we'll see how the year rolls.
Out. Well, I mean, with the industry being potentially precarious as well, we might as well make it make hay while the sun shines. I believe is the expression. Let's get all the reviews out there before next year turns into an absolute starving mess of where are all the video games we were promised last year.
At least we got stuff right now. There's Dead Space. There's Hi-Fi Rush. There are lots of lovely things. But yeah, speaking of lovely things, this has been the Entitled Partner Podcast, the UBP, the UBP.
UBP.
I've been Scott Tilford. That's been Jules Gill.
Yes, I have been. And remember, you can go every single Thursday to check out where to submit your questions, either on the Instagram, where I'll be there, at RetroJ, but the O is a zero, or you can go to Twitter, where Scott will be putting out his tweet, his call for questions, which will be at /LP89.
Yeah. A massive thank you once again for everybody for sending in their various questions. Take care, and we'll catch you all next week. Goodbye.
Bye. Was that an LA Knight reference, by the way? Yeah.
It was not, but I can...
Yeah.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.